I'm about to say something very, very corny, so I'm just warning you in advance. Every few years, a book comes out that is passed between friends and talked about at books clubs in conversations full of laughing and smiling. That's the corny bit. But it is true, don't you think? And a couple of years ago, that book was The Rosie Project by Graham Simsion. The book went on to be sold all over the world and has been optioned by a big Hollywood studio to be turned into a film. And the sequel to the book, The Rosie Effect, has just come out, so readers can catch up on the latest adventures of Don Tillman and his lovely Rosie. So what inspires Graham? Graham, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
What is the masterpiece you've chosen to talk about today?
It's Live 1966, the Royal Albert Hall Concert, the Bootleg Series, Volume 4, by Bob Dylan.
Now tell me, why did you choose this, Graham?
First of all, I am a middle-aged, middle-class male, so picking a Bob Dylan album, you know, baby boomer, you know, so picking a Bob Dylan album is hardly terribly original. In fact, the risk of it is that you're going to have the switchboard lighting up if I make any sort of mistake while the aficionado's out there saying, no, it was the 5th of May, not the 6th of May, or whatever it was. But let's say one of the things I didn't choose was a book. And even though I'm, you know, primarily these days a writer, I find now when I read, I'm reading with an author's eye. I'm reading critically, and there's a certain amount of work associated with it. Whereas I'm not a musician, and I find I can really enjoy music in a quite uncritical sort of way. So my comments on the album won't be musicians' comments. They're an average listener's, I guess.
I think I'll start by asking, why is it the world's most famous bootleg, which it pretty much is?
Well, it was a concert that Bob Dylan gave at a tremendously important moment in his career. It was the transition between being essentially a folk musician and entering the world of rock and roll. And the album itself is a concert that he gave, not at the Royal Albert Hall. It's actually a misleading title. It was at the Free Trade Hall in Manchester, but it was known for many years, mislabeled as the Albert Hall concert. But he does two sets, basically, and the first set is all acoustic, and the second set he comes on with the Hawks, which would become the band, Robbie Robertson's group, and play some really searing rock music. So you get both sides of Dylan. Dylan, the mature folk artist, and Dylan, the beginning and, you know, incandescent, I think, rock artist. It's a famous concert. It's the concert where someone yelled out Judas to him. You know, it aroused really quite strong emotions. You can see it on YouTube, but Martin Scorsese's film No Direction Home has some terrific footage from it.
So it was underground for so long. How did it sort of pass around? How did people discover this album?
Well, it was pressed onto vinyl, illegally. You know, somebody had scooted off with tapes from the show. And, you know, I first saw it. I never heard it early on, but I know that one of my colleagues, who was a Dylan tragic, had a copy of it, you know, with pretty ordinary sort of sound and so forth. But Dylan's record company at that stage was not releasing much of his live material, and this was seen as just a really important document.
Were you already a super fan when you discovered this bootleg, or was this something that helped get you more into Dylan?
Well, I discovered it when it was released officially. So even though they call it bootleg, it's a Sony official release now. It came out in, I think, 1998, and I had been, you know, a reasonably interested listener in Dylan up through the 70s, through the 1970s, and then really lost interest as he got into his Christian period and so forth, and really hadn't listened to him for, I guess, 20 years. And then this album came out in 98. I bought it at the supermarket in France and sort of plugged it into the CD player in the car and rediscovered Dylan. So it was quite important for me from that point of view. And I then went back and really listened to everything he'd done in the interim.
What is it that's so special about it musically for you?
Look, it's live for a start. And again, I'm not a musician, therefore I'm very forgiving of any mistakes or, you know, things that aren't right in a live environment. But the energy just comes across. You know, I think that some of the versions of the songs that he does on this album are the best versions that have been put on record, on disc. So they're a terrific selection of songs. He finishes up with Like a Rolling Stone, which is frequently voted the greatest rock song of all time, and it's a really incandescent version of the song. I mean, Greil Marcus wrote a whole book about this song, and he's got an argument that the studio recording was the sort of the one take that serendipitously happened to be really good, and if any other take had been released, it wouldn't have been the success it's been. But I think it's garbage, because the version on this live album would stand up anywhere.
Is there a moment on this album that you'd like to share with others to sort of get them to tap into this album?
The moment is for most people is when he's about to sing like a Rolling Stone and someone yells out, "Judas," and he responds, "You're a liar." And he turns to the band and he says, "Play effing loud." And, you know, this is tension. The guy's only 23 years old and he's standing up on stage in front of a huge audience and he doesn't give a damn about this. He's going to do what he wants to do. So that's a pretty electric, literally, moment.
I don't believe you. You're a liar.
If you want to listen to a song on the acoustic side, which I think represents near the peak of his acoustic work, and there's a few drugs going around in the system here without any doubt, but he does an almost sepulchral, spaced sort of version of some of the songs. He does Visions of Johanna, which, if you haven't heard the song, it's a song that Andrew Motion, the former poet laureate, regards as Dylan's best poetically. And, you know, if you want to see poetic lyrics in rock music, this is the place to go.
Just like the night to play tricks when you're trying to be so quiet. We sit here stranded, though we all do our best to deny it. And Louise holds a handful of rain, tempting you to defy it.
Are you still a Dylan fan?
Oh, yeah. I'm still a Dylan fan. I would still buy. I mean, one of the great things about Dylan is that his earliest work, I was 5 years old or so when his first, iconic albums were coming out. So I came to Dylan after he'd been producing for some time, and he's still out there. He's had a new album of new material in the last couple of years. So, yeah, I would go out, and if there's a new album released, I'll be picking it up.
How do you feel about him as a live performer? Because I find it really interesting. I'm a big fan of his recorded music as well, but I have no desire to go and see him live just simply because I've heard that he...
Let me grab you. I would absolutely not take somebody I wanted to introduce to Dylan to a present-day Dylan concert.
Right.
I would actually say pick up this album we're talking about, Live 1966. That is a great entree to Dylan at, I won't say his peak, but you could say his peak or at least one of the major career peaks. Mm-hmm. Dylan... today, his voice is not for the squeamish. When I go to a Dylan concert now, just as if I read a book or anything, you bring yourself to that. So I bring a whole history of listening to Dylan. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the concert, I just remember in the Melbourne concert I went to, he played Blowing in the Wind. Now, I tell you, if Paul McCartney had finished a concert at the end, no matter what he'd done in the concert, and he got up and he played Yesterday or Blackbird, absolutely straight on acoustic guitar, he'd have the audience totally in the palm of his hand. That option is there for Dylan if he wants it. He can sit up there and he can play Blowing in the Wind absolutely straight as he recorded it in about 1962-63 or so. Switchboard lights up. And he would have the audience absolutely there, but he doesn't. He does a completely different rearrangement that nobody will recognise because that's the nature of the man. It's the same man who was standing up at 23 saying, "Play effing loud," to the band.
Thank you.
you're sitting there in the audience as a fan, I mean, do you just...
It sounds to me like you are
appreciating his artistry and his choice to not be like the singing, song and dance man entertainer type. But are there times when you're sitting there thinking, I wish you'd just bloody sing it the way
especially
you
if you take someone with you, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But look, some, and he's, you know, I've seen a lot of his concerts and they vary. Every now and again, though, he will pull out a performance of a song. It could be one of his most recent songs, it often is, that just leaves you, you know, wow. I saw him in Pocatello, Idaho one time. I was on my way to a conference and I ended up finding out he was on at Pocatello, population, I think, 50,000, and got a plane there and got a ticket. And he started off, he sang Mr. Tambourine Man first, and it was just so, it was a train wreck. The audience were trying to tell him the lyrics.
Oh,
and, you know,
so
how awful is this going to be? Mm. And then, you know, whatever medications he was on cut in, and he played a song called It's All Right, Mara, I'm Only Bleeding, which is a really rattling, bang, 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 you know, almost a rap, you know, lyrics, and he just nailed it. And then played a few more songs. He had the audience absolutely eating out of his hand in Pocatello, Idaho, and then played what had been a recent song from then called Not Dark Yet. And it's my absolute best moment ever at a concert. Dylan singing Not Dark Yet from Time Out of Mind to an absolutely rapt audience who would not have been Dylan fans particularly. You know, it's 10% of the population of Pocatello have turned up to this concert. So they're hardly the rusted on fans. And he just had them. It was just my best moment ever at a concert. So you go for that and you expect there are going to be some downs as well.
But not in this, your masterpiece.
I don't think there are too many downs in this masterpiece. I mean, you might say, I wish you'd chosen this one over this one. But you get Visions of Johanna and you get Mr. Tambourine Man and It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. And these are great songs from his early period. And then in the second part, you get this blistering version. He opens with a song called Tell Me Mama, which I don't think he ever recorded anywhere else. I was actually, you know, in New York and Greil Marcus, the rock journalist, writer, gave a seminar on Dylan. And that's what he opened with, this Tell Me Mama. This Harry walked onto the stage after, you know, he'd faded out with Mr. Tambourine Man. It's a very, he just plays solo harmonica in this huge hall and it's just echoing around the hall. He's doing all you can with just a harmonica and an acoustic guitar and it's just, you know, almost quite ethereal. And then, you know, because on the album there's no interval, bang, straight in there. He's got a full-on rock band. And, you know, someone commented that today we're used to very loud music. Mm. But for many people there, that would have been the loudest music they'd ever heard. The men, you know, these guys from America who'd bought these amplifiers with them in 1966 and were really just, you know, blasting it out.
Well, Graham Simsion, it's been lovely chatting with you about this album. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Melanie.